Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival. Visit catskill-cuisine.com to learn more and buy tickets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm talking to Miles Soboroff, co-founder of Zavs, the Dattle Pepper hot sauce company that's won over heat lovers across the U.S. After 5 years working in CPG sales, Miles teamed up with two good friends to turn his enthusiasm for this special chili pepper into a hot sauce business that now has distribution at, wait for it, Central Market, Wegmans, Fresh Market, Calustians, we'll talk about that, Erewhon Sprouts, Harmons, and more. Hi, Miles.
Hey, Allie. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for what you do. I've learned so much from listening to your show for many, many hours.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, I've learned so much, too. It's fun because I feel like there are these sort of like, I always talk about it like writing a research paper. Like when I was writing research papers in my era, like what we would do is we would write a different fact on an index card, like a white index card. This was, you know, I had to take my floppy to the Kinko's basically in Durham. And so I would write everything on an index card, and on the back of the index card, I would write the source. And then at the end of my research, I would have basically like 400 index cards. And then I got to do this really fun, like culling. And so I would start putting them, each fact or each little piece of information, like into its own pile. And then I would start to sort out like, okay, what's the topic sentence of this pile? And like, does this make sense in it? Or, and then no, yes. And it was like this, that's how my brain started working. I don't know if it worked that way before the index cards or if that's why I enjoyed it so much, but that's kind of how I feel about this podcast. Like everything you say is basically one index card. And what's starting to happen over 235 of them is that there are these themes and these like buckets and these sort of truths that start to like pop up. And then there's the occasional like total random thing that I'm like, I don't know what to do with that. You know, like we'll put it over to the side. But anyway, thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. I have been able to recall some of your index cards and my dealings with Zab. So I'm learning as I go for sure.
Well, awesome. That was a very long way of explaining, you know, thank you. Okay. So I didn't send you a draft ahead of time. I think you're one of the first people I haven't sent a draft to ahead of time.
I'm honored.
I'm not sure why, other than I felt like you could handle it. And I don't, you know, I don't feel like you need sort of me to be like, you're not nervous about this. But partly also because it would have been a little embarrassing, I think, to send you a draft with how I want to open this, which is I am a little jealous. And I'm a little jealous about the brand, the vibe, something about the way that you have the message carrying through. And I don't usually lead with that. I led with that with Justin from Bachans too, because I have to admit, I am a little jealous of that as well.
Me too.
As I should be. But I don't know. I want to know if it's all intentional or if there's something that you're doing that I'm picking up on as a consumer or as like someone who's just like attuned to this, or if you're like, wow, I've never heard that. Geez, thanks. Like, I have a feeling there's like real intention, and I just want to understand it a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's amazing. I do not hear that every day, so it's very nice. And I think the answer is kind of yes and no. Yes, in terms of we're very, very intentional about the very, very small number of things we feel like we can control. And then we are very open-minded and flexible and observant about what happens from there. So intentional for sure in the look and feel and the taste of the product. You know, those are the things that we felt like we had to get right. We always say, you know, we're in the preference business. I've, again, listened to this podcast a million times, and there are people doing a lot more breakthrough type of stuff than we are, you know, that deliver on different health attributes or other promises. And Zavs does not. We make hot sauce. Yes, we use a rare chili pepper that's pretty different in the competitive landscape, but it's still hot sauce. And at the end of the day, we think people are going to choose it because it tastes really good and it makes you feel a certain way. And so to us, the intentional piece is just being ourselves. It's really leaning into the Dattle Pepper. The Dattle Pepper has been grown in St. Augustine, Florida for 200, 250 years and is beloved for what we've come to call the slow burn. It's this naturally delayed heat that doesn't really smack you up front. It's sweet and flavorful up front with this building, lingering heat on the back end that adds depth and nuance to each bite is the way we look at it. So we started with that and built the brand around that. Slowness, this old city that was established in 1565. And can we translate the slow burn into every place where you're going to interact with the brand as a consumer? So the packaging was first. We found a designer that we felt like was very aligned and that was going to help us tell this story of slowness, nostalgia, kind of Americana. And it was also important to us that it didn't look and feel like a regional hot sauce. We wanted it to look and feel like an American product because we felt like this ingredient should be a classic American ingredient. And then beyond that, yeah, we just have kind of tried to connect with people who understand it and feel it intuitively. And I think that's why maybe everything feels intentional, is we don't try to be too loud anywhere we go. We want people to gravitate towards it naturally.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about gravitating toward it. But going back to sort of that, you know, embodiment of old city, slow burn, I think what it reminds me of is like, it feels like it's always been there. You know, it feels like this could have been around in 1943 and it's just new to me. And it is, it's like, there is just this like, your stand, it's like, you're there and we're all kind of figuring it out, as opposed to we're around and you're trying to figure out how to get into our brains.
Which is
a really great brand position to have. It's a confident brand position. It's consistent. But I think it is slower in a lot of ways. And I also think that, you know, when you talk about people gravitating to it, I think we're a little bit like that, honestly. Like, we've never been particularly like promotional or self. I'm trying to be a little bit more out there with the aioli, but part of the challenge there is that there are so many louder brands and so much noise, and expecting a consumer to make that discovery and like waiting it out can be challenging. So how do you manage that?
That's an amazing question. I struggle with that a lot because we have, you know, I have partners, I have a wife, I have a life, and people who think we should be going faster and are ready to go faster. not calling out any one of those people in particular, but, and I have pressures from inside myself. I want to see this thing be all that it can be. And we have investors, and with that comes expectations. So sitting back and waiting for everybody to come to you is not the entirety of the strategy. It's sort of a guide for us. We still have to then go out and meet people where they are. So we just have to do that in our own way, without being too loud, while maintaining very consistent messaging and trying to let people discover it on their own. We feel like the strongest emotional connection you can make with the consumer is one that they decide on, they opt into.
Yeah.
And so we really want to maintain that, but toe the line and still have to get out there. So for us, that has meant meeting them in their actual lives. So we work with quite a few restaurants. You know, food service has been a really important channel for us in the early days of our business to get people to discover it there. So instead of trying to be discovered in the grocery store by spending a lot of money on promotions and popping off the shelf. And granted, we're, as you now know, we are in the center of the store in a pretty sleepy part of the store. So it's a challenge to get eyeballs there. Instead of competing there, which is pretty expensive and challenging, we feel like let's meet people where they are. So at restaurants, at the butcher shop, at the cheese store, at their local coffee shop, the local bagel shop. So we look at it like, those are, in our eyes, the biggest influencers of all time. It's where do people actually go spend their time? Who's curating those experiences for them? And can we have the local chef choose Zabs and tell you about it? Can we have your local butcher choose Zabs and tell you about it? And so that's how we have sort of towed that line of being aggressive, but still maintaining, you know, sort of being true to our voice and our, what we think is like a humble position in the world.
So if that's the strategy, I mean, part of the challenge with that is like every individual butcher, every individual coffee shop, you know, it's resource intensive
for
boots on the ground people to make those connections. Now, again, they're deeper, they're more real. There's nothing like having people advocate for your brand. But like with our chimichurri, for example, I've gone into every butcher that I can in Whole Foods, right? We're usually either across the way or a little bit around. And I'm like, you sell this in your store. It is around the corner. And oftentimes, a lot of the butchers are like, yeah, I'm telling people to go. That's the only one I would recommend. You know, they love it. But sometimes they're like, I had no idea this was in the store.
It's hard to guarantee, you know, and it's hard to manage for sure.
Yeah. And then it's like, okay, so I feel really good if I get the one guy from Scarsdale bought in. But then the thought immediately behind that is, you know, there are 500 of these. How are we going to do that? So I know you, I mean, food service is like, your pump is so cool. It's so beautiful. And it does make so much sense to be where people are. It makes so much sense to be in these different types of retail environments, and you can, which is a cool place to do it. But how are you, if that's the strategy, does your team reflect that in terms of how you allocate your resources?
Yeah, we're a very small team. So it's myself and one woman who's our food service manager that just joined our team in January, who happens to be the daughter of our dattle pepper farmer. So double awesome.
But
she's amazing. And she also knows she has the same level of enthusiasm. Yeah. She has the same enthusiasm around this chili pepper that I do, even more so. So that's also very intentional, and she's fantastic, but we're a very small team and it is very personal. And I mean, I'll qualify all this by saying this. I'm not saying this is the way. I'm saying this way works for us. And it's been slow. I mean, we are still pretty small in the grand scheme of things as a business. And that poses its own challenges. But it's the way that we've decided to approach it specific to our category, because we feel like in order to break into sort of the top five, as we like to call it, like the staples of the hot sauce category, it's a long uphill battle. And you need to surpass thousands, tens of thousands of brands who are doing it on a regional or even mom and pop sort of scale. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we're willing to be more patient. That doesn't necessarily work in every category. For us, right. We think it does. We still drive ourselves crazy with this level of slowness from time to time. But yes, to answer your question, we are set up for sort of hand-to-hand combat, if you will. It's like we have to build the building blocks one at a time. And we started with the restaurants that we admire most and thought would be the coolest ones that we'd be most excited about. The diners that we love, you know, Superiority Burger in New York. Superiority Burger is actually a really interesting example because he's an example of how it starts to slowly spiral up, whereby Chef Brooks found Zabs in a store in Los Angeles on a trip to LA, and he reached out to us. So that was actually validation of the strategy, meaning we spent a lot of time going door to door, building those relationships, managing them ourselves, trying to pick places that we knew sort of influenced each other, like creating these tight ecosystems, if you will. Yep. So like if we knew that this butcher follows that butcher on Instagram, we get into this butcher and then we post it on Instagram, then hopefully they see it, then we can reach out to them, tell a little bit of a better story. So it's just these very slow building blocks that allow you to tell a better and better story each time out.
Yeah. You know, last week I had on the Burlap and Barrel guys and I referenced actually Soom Tahini too, because, you know, I think coming out of COVID, we're getting back into recognizing, again, maybe not the celebrity chef thing that was going on in like 2012 to 2018-ish, but we are getting back to, there are authorities on things. Whether, you know, even in food media, for example, right? Like if everyone is just, everyone's a critic, everyone's a recipe developer, then, okay, maybe that's in response to the gatekeeping. But now we're getting to, there are these curators on social media. There are these experts. Like we're starting to read Substacks because we want not just the world's opinion, but we want the people who we value's opinion. And Brooks is a really good example of someone who carries a lot of, you know, that sort of like equity in terms of, you know, what he represents and what, you know, what he says. And that's how Soom built their business too. Like it was these chefs who would say, I get my tahini from here and this is why. As opposed to her going out and getting like a million Instagram followers trying to teach them how to use tahini.
Yep.
So it is, it does feel like it's like coming back, which is kind of cool because it's a big part of the business if you're in food, you know? I mean, you want to partner with these folks.
Yeah. To me, we sort of arrived at this strategy not because we're so smart. I don't think we are. I think it was out of complete necessity. We thought grocery is going to be too competitive and too expensive. Digital, Truff did a phenomenal job of building their brand digitally native, sort of heyday of Instagram ads. And I don't really think we're that good at that. I can speak for myself. I know I'm not that social media savvy to be able to do it all on social media. So for us, I still think restaurants are sort of the last frontier of in-person experience that you have to do in person. And people still get together with their friends. It's a very emotional experience. It's a very memorable experience as compared to a transactional experience that comes with being served an ad or shopping in the grocery store at times. So we just arrived on this out of necessity, in my opinion. And also, again, we're in a unique category where hot sauce is native to the restaurant environment. You know, what other category can you have your product in all of its glory sitting on the table for someone to sample on their own and spin it around, read about it, go on your website, go on your social media, and have this moment where they are meeting it in the middle where they want to. So that's why. And I do think of chefs as the ultimate curators and tastemakers in the food world. As well as, there are home cooks that are doing incredible stuff on social media, and we try to sort of gift and seed some product to them lightly, and we're trying to figure out how to build community around that. But the chef thing just sort of seemed natural to us, to be honest.
Yeah. Did you listen to Miguel on when he was talking about Cholula's sort of secret weapon? Because I would imagine that would be a good one for you to hear.
Yes, I have. Yeah. Not only that, it was sort of I thought back to my own experience. Like, again, very simply, this wasn't like a very academic study. It was pretty simple. Like, where did I first learn about the hot sauces that I interact with most of my life? I tried Cholula at a like casual Mexican-American place called Baja Fresh in Los Angeles 25 years ago. And Tabasco is everywhere. And Hoi Fong Sriracha I've had on every spicy tuna roll at a restaurant, and amongst a million other amazing uses of that product. And Crystal I've had at Hillstone. And they all recall a particular place to me.
Experience.
And a particular experience. And so we really think of ourselves as much as in being in the hospitality business as the product business, where we want you to have an emotional moment with it and remember it and how it makes you feel versus us explaining it to you.
Yeah, no, I love that. Okay, we're going to take a little break and we're going to come back and talk about channels and supply chain. Oh my.
Gather your friends and family at the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival, presented by the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and Resorts World Catskills. Mark your calendars for a flavor-packed weekend from May 10th to May 12th. Experience the fusion of phenomenal food and electrifying entertainment. Rub shoulders with your favorite Food Network personalities, including Andrew Zimmern, Michael Simon, Scott Conant, Marcus Samuelson, Jeffrey Zakarian, Anne Burrell, Melba Wilson, and distinguished international chefs by LaBelle Farms. Kick off the festivities with Friday's star-studded golf tournament and evening reception. Saturday heats up with free tastings, thrilling live demos, music, and family activities, culminating with a gourmet dinner hosted by celebrity chefs. And on Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with a special celebrity-curated brunch. Tickets for this celebration are selling like hotcakes. Visit Catskill-Cuisine.com to grab your pass for this unforgettable weekend in the picturesque Catskills. See you there.
I'm back with Miles Soboroff, co-founder and CEO of Zabs. So one thing about the dattel pepper, dattel.
All right.
Amazing. supply chain. So one of the things we've talked about on this podcast, as I'm sure you've heard, is that if you can try to use ingredients that are more readily available, or where you have multiple suppliers in case there's a drought or a flood, or, you know, someone sells the farm, it, I imagine that it's not that broadly available. And so I'm just kind of curious about,
yes. This is something that surely keeps us up at night, and I'm sure investors and other stakeholders as well. But again, sort of similar answer to my other stuff. We sort of backed into this. We fell in love with the chili pepper first, and then we had to figure it out. So we didn't set out to start a business and say, what's going to be the easiest pepper that we can access at the local grocery store if, you know, things go sideways. We thought about the fact that this chili pepper is so delicious and its story has not been broadly told outside of St. Augustine, Florida, where it is celebrated. But I had the good fortune, I think, of being an outsider and not being from there, and falling in love with it, sharing it with friends and seeing their reaction to this chili pepper. And so, out of necessity, again, I realized I got to figure out a way to make this accessible to more people and celebrate this chili pepper that's endangered. You know, it's at risk of going extinct if more people don't actually make an effort to grow it.
Right.
So on one hand, yes, it causes us a lot of challenges. We are constrained by that. So we can only grow so fast. So back to your question about patience in terms of the go-to-market strategy. That's part of it, is we can only scale this up as fast as we can grow the chili peppers. And there are not a lot of farmers in that area growing them at any kind of industrial scale. And my business partner and co-founder and best friend, PJ, has done a really good job of working with local farmers. And now primarily with one farmer who I mentioned, his daughter is part of our team now. He's done an incredible job of growing the chili peppers to our specifications using best organic practices, and increasing the yield year over year since we started doing this at farmers markets, and building shaded areas, building greenhouses. And so for us, it's just a matter of time and money to be able to scale it up. So by going slow and building demand and knowing what retailers are going to be coming on board or what restaurants are going to be coming on board a little bit ahead of time, we have to give him, call it 6-8 months notice of what we expect to need in the following year.
Right.
And he can sort of scale up the operation a little bit to meet us there. So it takes time. It is a little bit scary, but that is exactly why we're doing it, is because it hasn't been done. So it's a double-edged sword, but we are prepared to
take it on. Those are the most fun swords.
Yeah.
It's, those swords it are makes the it best interesting. Swords. And by the way, you know, we keep talking about like slow and whatnot. You're in a lot of frickin' stores. I mean, this is not like a small list, you know?
We're pretty small. I mean, you know, maybe it's the other double-edged sword of listening to your show too much, where I'm hearing, you know, Burlap and Barrel, they're behemoths. All these people I listen to all the time are doing so much cool stuff that I'm so inspired by. Bachan's, I mean, that's a brand that I just think is so ridiculously cool.
That's not even, none of us. I mean, he's the lightning in a bottle. It's fine.
Totally.
I came to terms with it a while ago. I'm like, I'm so happy for him. I'm happy for them. I'm also a human, so I'm a little jelly.
Yes.
And
yes,
that's okay. And I'm just going to name it. It's fine.
Me too.
We're allowed to be. And he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. So we're all.
Makes me even happier,
exactly.
to root for him, which I do. And I eat a lot of that product. And as do I eat a lot of yours. But we're in, 1,500 doors maybe in total between restaurants and retailers. And so it maybe feels, I mean, that is a lot. If when we set out to think that our product is in one place in New York, I would have lost my mind and thought that was the coolest thing ever. So 1,500 doors is very cool. But in the grand scheme of things, it's still very small. We barely scratched the surface. But we've just, again, been very intentional about creating what we call ecosystems. It's like, can we meet the same person in multiple places in their life, at their coffee shop, at their favorite bagel shop, at their favorite general store, and then eventually at their grocery store? So they think we're everywhere, but we're really not. You know, we're just in the places that we really wanted to be early on. We're very, very fortunate that it has resonated in those places.
Well, one thing I will tell you is when I was out in L.A., I went out to LA like 10 days before Expo West because my daughter lives there. And I mean, why not be in LA if I can be? And I was doing a bunch of store visits and sort of the shoppy shop visits and the butcher visits and just getting a lay of the land with like the all day cafes. And the LA food scene is very different than New York. And it did feel like you were everywhere. I mean, I would say you and Jing and Fishwife. I'm like, is there a store where they are not? I mean, it was everywhere. And I think a lot of that, and tell me if I'm wrong, is facilitated by fair.
A decent amount of it is, for sure, especially on the retail side, yes. But we've been doing this for 4 years since we started at the farmers market. So I didn't get on fair until probably a year and a half into it. So it was a lot of, and still is a lot of miles on my Volkswagen, just going from place to place. I grew up in Los Angeles too. So I have the advantage of that I sort of know the community, and I have one brother and three younger sisters. So they share information.
Oh my gosh, you're one of five?
I'm one of five. And so they're always telling me, check this place out. Oh, amazing. Oh, yes. Of course I knew that. Yes, of course I knew that.
Where are you in the birth order? Sorry.
I'm the second oldest. Older brother and three younger sisters. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But they are very knowledgeable. Yeah. They're all very cool and all do different things in life. And they are very nice to share with me. Hey, have you seen this place? You got to get Zabs in here. You got to go here. And so there's a lot of that in my life. And so I'm running around constantly or reaching out on Instagram or reaching out on email to the places I want to be in. So before fair, we had a decent base already, which I think once we got on to fair, just kind of helped us stand out, I guess, at least amongst our category. And, you know, to be alongside Jing and Becca Fishwife is, that's a huge honor. Love what they're doing too.
Well, so if we can stay on fair for a little bit, because I mean, I get it. Like, you've been boots on the ground, you've been running, cases of this to your favorite places and to all around and building that like regional ubiquity, as they call it. And that's just like, I think most of the people that I've interviewed on here that have had real success, that is just what you have to do. To get it started. it's like that's what creates that little nugget that grows into, you know, a sprout that grows into a shoot that grows into a plant that starts to flower. And, you know, people might think that it's the pre D to C way, but I think what you were saying very much makes sense. Like there's a, in real life, there's a tangible, there's a memorable, there's a hospitality piece to it. So all of that totally makes sense to me. The fair piece seems to be a way to maybe put it into a system where the distribution is a little bit easier.
Totally.
I mean, you tell me, like, but for me, and, you know, also thank you because you've been very helpful to us as we're trying to figure this out because we're launching on it next month in May. You know, I'd like to just talk a little bit about it because I haven't really had a guest on to talk too much about it. But I think that there are 750,000 retailers on there. They're not all going to be the right fit for you. You might not go into like a spa store, for example, but a lot of them will be. And I think that, you know, as I now realize, like I had a Shopee shop before it was a Shopee shop at the cooking school. And I was too small to, of course, make a UNFI order. I was too small to make a DSD order. And so it was really hard for some brands to connect with me. And I think Fair has really solved that. There's definitely some pricing stuff. You know, it is another thing to manage. But I would just like to hear sort of your overarching thoughts for founders who are on there and it's not going great or planning to go on there and how to kind of maximize it.
I think it's a great tool. We have used it, I think, to the best of our ability. Maybe not. We haven't done a lot of like, we haven't utilized their email tools as much as I think we should to stay in front of customers. But again, it's sort of not our style, especially in our category. Like the frequencies are not that high where we want to be bugging them once a week or once a month. Our customers are ordering more like once every couple of months, once a quarter, some higher volume stores more. But I think Fair has been fantastic and it's a great tool for us to just be there and hopefully overperform in a small set of places that I don't really know if this is how it works, but I think probably climb a little higher in the algorithm where shops are looking for a hot sauce or products to fill up their shelves. And hopefully we are shown a little bit higher than most because we've gotten good reviews. So we treat it like anything else. Again, like overdo it on service. If we get an order from a place, we're usually going to reach out to them through Fair and send them a message and just say, thank you. And here's our, if you have any issues, let us know. And we're really excited to work with you. I looked up your place on Instagram. It looks amazing. You know, to whatever extent we can start to build a relationship there. We've used the same tools we've used in real life. And I know that's not super scalable. If you're Fishwife, you're probably getting about 749,000 out of the 750,000 retailers are ordering your stuff on a given day. But I'm just joking. But we're not like
spa.
That.
I don't know that the spa is selling.
That's the only one. Yeah. That's the only one that was left off the list. But we try to approach it the same way. And, you know, we participate in things they let us participate in. There's not a whole heck of a lot you can do other than email.
Right.
Like, I wish we could be more proactive. The only other thing that we really try and do to drive more business to Fair is reach out to people off of Fair and assume that a lot of them now have it. So reaching out on Instagram, reaching out by email or on their contact of their website and saying, hey, you know, your place looks awesome. We love what you do. We're on there. And if you want to try a sample, we're happy to send you some. Here's what we do. And sometimes they just order it. Sometimes they'll take us up on the sample. Sometimes they don't respond at all. But that's generally worked pretty well for us. And then you get some good recurring business. And it does alleviate a lot of the administrative stuff, the invoicing and the chasing them down for the money. And then there's a lot of administrative stuff. The average email that I get from a direct customer of ours that is not unfair you know, they got to email me and probably have to remember who I am, what my name is, what my email is, and tell me what they want, or maybe ask me a question about if something's in stock or available. What was the price again on this? So there's a lot of back and forth that is alleviated right. through FAIR. So just keeping it as updated as you can, trying to be as proactive as you can, and treat those as relationships too, is my advice.
Yeah. Pricing. Can you help me a little bit? Because I remember, so when I had a retail shop, basically, if I spent $2 on something, it was on the shelf for $4. So if I'm buying something for $2 and I'm spending $2 on shipping, it's now on the shelf for $8.
Yes.
And it's going to be more in that case than probably anywhere. But it also seems like the person who was shopping for mustard at my cooking school kind of had the comfort level with spending more on that mustard as like an impulse buy, something to remember her experience at the cooking school, rather than the shopper who's at the supermarket or like buying mustard because they need it for potato salad at Walmart.
Sure.
So is the price okay to be, it's going to be higher, and we just, how should we think about, like, we don't want to lose money on there. And we don't want it to just be awareness. So what are your thoughts around that?
Well, no, you don't want to lose money. Nobody likes that. And none of us, I think, that are listening to this show are that big where we can afford to just treat things as sort of top of funnel brand awareness. Like we got a business to try and sustain. And so we are very sensitive to that. But, you know, the first thing is we also recognize doing what we do that we have very little control over the retail price anyway. So
right. Even at Target,
Target to Whole Foods to Sprouts to wherever, at the end of the day, they're going to price it the way they want to price it. You give them a suggested price. And this always surprises me how consumers sometimes, you know, have an issue with that. Oh, why are you charging so much at Erewhon versus Whole Foods? Well, that's not our choice. They're getting it for we're selling it to the distributor for the same price, and then the distributor charges whatever they charge based on that relationship to that retailer. So there's a lot of factors in there that makes it confusing. But the way we look at it to try and simplify it is trying to balance everybody's interests, which is we need to make a healthy gross margin. And we want it to be on the shelf at a reasonable price. We don't want a bottle of hot sauce to be $20, whereby, we got our full, you know, fat margin. We're happy and our investors are going to be happy, but we're not moving any product. It doesn't do us any good. So we've tried to look at, again, like one big ecosystem where we're trying to get people to discover our product in those specialty stores. They're probably willing to pay a little bit more there, and they will end up paying a little bit more there than the grocery store. But we don't want it to be an astronomical amount. So you asked the question about shipping. And I think there's sort of an answer in the middle, which is one thing we've done, which I may get comments that I'm so stupid for doing this, but we offer free shipping oftentimes, or better yet, all the time on FAIR. So we eat the shipping. So we factor that into our pricing architecture. So we figure we want to be on shelf at around this number. We want our wholesale price to be around that number for every retailer, for specialty stores, for grocery stores. You know, we want to sell to the distributor for one price. And then we know the distributor's got to eat too. So we've already factored that, and you got to get it to the distributor. So there's freight. So we figured there's freight, there's a distributor, there's all these people along the chain that
bites
need
to eat.
Bites of
the apple. Yep.
Yeah, they're all getting their bites of the apple anyway. So we just figure, can we figure out a model that works with free shipping? And we just charge that flat wholesale price that we think is FAIR, that we think we can afford. You know, you can maneuver your minimum order quantities to make sure that there's efficiencies with the packaging. You're not just sending one unit. You're sending 24 units or whatever it is you need to make sure that it's going to get there safely and efficiently and that you can make some money on it. So you just, for us, trial and error, we ran a lot of different scenarios. Okay, let's send it to a place in New Hampshire. Let's send it to a place in Los Angeles. Let's send it to a place in the middle and see what the price looks like. And run the numbers and make sure that we still have a healthy gross margin in there no matter the scenario. And I think maybe FAIR puts us a little higher as a result of that, because it shows the promotion that Zavs is doing free shipping, which now if everybody, I'm either going to be the dumbest guy in the room here, or people are going to start copying us and then we're not going to be promoted as high because everybody's doing it. But I'm happy to share and I'm happy to be proven wrong that this is a terrible strategy. We'll see.
No, I mean, basically, I feel like everything I do is totally available to pretty much anyone who listens to this, even if I don't mean it to be anyway. Like, we were just talking to this, we're thinking about doing like a bit of a marketing exercise. And, you know, I was like, we should just film and record every discussion and every meeting with this agency. And my whole team looked at me in horror, right? Because like, it's like, we should just like take off all our clothes and just let everyone just watch us as we run around naked. Like it's very, you know, it's like, I don't think any of us are feeling, I mean, I got over a long time ago thinking that anyone is actually competing, because I don't think we are. But yes, I think it's more like, we're more concerned, like, this is how we're thinking about it. I hope that at some point I don't look like a total jackass thinking about it this way. But
yeah,
I also think that this whole thing is trial and error. And to your point about, you know, you said something earlier, I think everything changes so fast. Like, what works for Sir Kensington's in 2012 does not work for a ketchup company in 2024.
Yep.
And what worked for Truff when it, you know, during the go-go years, is not going to work for Zabs today.
Right.
They're just, the world has changed. People are different. The channels are different. The costs are different. So build shipping in is basically that was one thing.
I just think that's one lever that you can pull to try to control the price for the consumer. You can roughly estimate that the retailer wants their, call it 35% to 50-ish%. And so you can kind of control it that way. It's just one way to do it.
Yep. The other thing that you said, I wasn't on this call, but I think you said this when someone from my team was first talking to you, but you said that there is somewhat of a natural churn in the fair customer, that they're part of what they're doing is trying to find the newest and the coolest to some extent. And that we do think of it as like awareness in that sense. It's not necessarily, you're not going to be in this shoppy shop, let's say, for a decade. Now, by the way, you could very much be in a butcher for a decade, but that there is something a little different about that fair customer that is worth, you know, just kind of, they're not necessarily the same thing as winning a Sprouts.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, again, we look at them as getting new consumers introduced to our product and our brand. Right. And while we have had some retailers stick around on fair for a long time that we're so grateful for, we've also lost a bunch, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And we don't act surprised by that, because I think, as I said to your team, like, I expect that retailer, with their very, very small footprint and limited shelf space, is always trying to find something new and interesting to keep that customer coming in the door. And they might still have their bottle of Zabs on their pantry or countertop at home and are ready to explore something else new when they walk in the door. So they got to keep it fresh, keep it interesting. But again, it's adjusting your expectations and being intentional about, you know, you asked about channels, and I think each channel has to check a very specific box in your mind, is what I've learned, of what am I expecting from this? I don't expect them all to perform equally. I don't expect to make the same money in each channel. Some of them are, you've said this a bunch about Target and other stuff, like some of them are intended to drive trial and to bring people into the ecosystem. And then ultimately, we have to meet them where they are and be at the grocery store or on Amazon or wherever it is they shop for their groceries. And so it's kind of it is a moving target. And that's another reason why we just try and stay as true to who we are as we can. And let those places come and go as they see fit.
Yep. Let the chaos be around you. You be the sanity.
We try. We're not always very good at that. You make it sound like we are so good at that. We are not.
well, that's sort of our guiding star.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that.
I know. You know, so we do these like user guides. I'm sure you've heard me talk about them, or you know how everyone who comes and joins the team sort of shares this like guide to them. You know,
I talk a lot
with my hands. I fill in spaces when I feel like there's awkward silence. I get a little bit upset when I don't feel like people are making eye contact, whatever. And our new sales director basically was like, his whole, like the lead of his user guide was like, I'm like a duck. I am looking like I'm kind of like chill, kind of gliding along the surface, but under the surface, my like... Like legs are just like, you know. So that's kind of what you're describing. It's cool though, because to the outside world, you're just kind of gliding. You're gliding in the Zabs way with the Zabs vibe, and people are coming to you. That's important.
That's important to us because at the end of the day, it's about them. It's not about us. And there's a lot of temptation to make it about us, and that's just not. It's not who we are. So I want them to have a smooth, seamless experience with our brand, even if behind the scenes we're losing our shit, you know, during difficult times, which are often. So we try to do that intentionally, and I'm really happy it comes through that way. But we're people, you know, and when needed, we share that, you know, whether it's on a broken glass order on our Shopify, someone's complaining. It's like, hey, we're really sorry. Like, we're going to look into that. We're people. And obviously that's not cool with us either. So give me a minute. So we try and just be as, I don't know, relatable, transparent, and true to ourselves as possible. So we're not creating expectations that we can be something that we're not.
Yep. I want to go back just for the last couple minutes to talking about grocery. You know, you said it. I don't know the hot sauce category very well. I know that there is a lot of hot sauce. And I think what you said about making sure that you are not regional, but that you feel kind of national, that was a really interesting point to me. But, you know, I've never been in a crowded category. I'm headed into one as we speak. I've never really had incumbents to take share from. I've never been next to Primal Kitchen and Hellman's and Chosen Foods. And now I'm next to all of them. What would you say are some of the things that you've learned just being in a big, growing, and yet rather crowded and maybe not like super crazy high velocity category? You talk about for each channel, the expectations and aligning to the goals of each channel. You know, what is the story that you're ultimately trying to tell grocery, you know, to keep that expansion going?
Well, it's hard is the first answer. And we're not aggressively trying to keep expansion going, to tell you the truth. We were fortunate last year in 2023 on the strength of our story, on the strength of all these great restaurants we're in. And we've been fortunate to get some like cool little press here and there organically. And those kind of things have allowed us to put together a good story that got retailers on board. And our focus now is on executing in those retailers, because we've learned the hard way very quickly that when you're in the middle of the store, where 99% of the people that enter that store on a given day don't go down that aisle or certainly don't notice our brand, it leaves a lot to be desired in terms of pulling product off the shelf. So we're up against stiff competition, better established competition, and cheaper price competition. So my first thing is like just sort of obvious. Go spend time in the store and stare mm-hmm. at the shelf and get to know who your neighbors are. Like, who are you up against? What's the competitive landscape look like price-wise? You know, I spent a lot of time looking at bottles of Cholula and Tabasco and Truff. And like, I'll tell you, I want to be right between Tabasco and Truff to whatever extent I can impact that. So when you go talk to the buyer, when you go talk to the grocery manager, you try and tell that. I mean, again, you don't have that much control, but you try, because Truff is really expensive, sort of a luxury priced hot sauce, which helps the consumer's eye not be so shocked when they see something that's 15-20% more expensive than Tabasco, sort right. of Old Faithful. So that's where we want to be. We want to look. We want your eye to go somewhere familiar. And then have a moment where you say, ooh, but that's also new and different, interesting. Let me take another mm-hmm. look at this.
Yeah, feels premium, but not break the bank premium.
Yeah, yeah. we say like everyday premium. And so mm-hmm. not something that is out of reach, something that's affordable and versatile. And you gotta, you know, our expectations are modest, to answer your question. We know that until we have been able to build a national brand through food service and through word of mouth, which is a slow build, how does one person tell another person that brings it to a dinner party and tells another person that brings it to the barbecue, get you to know about Zavs by the time you walk in there and look for it, or at least, you know, have it jump out to you when you walk down that aisle. So our expectations are modest until we build a national food service brand or build a sort of a household name brand, or we have to be prepared to make the investments that everybody else has to make, which is it merchandising? I learned early on from you about having your salmon merchandise over, you know, having the salmon merchandise with your product so that people will eat more salmon. Like, we want to try and be where Bachan's is, buy the meat. We want to be where the fish is too. So people think about, oh, can I grill with this during 4th of July? Should I, you know, cross merchandising is very helpful. So anything you can do to impact that is huge. The price yep. promotions are necessary, but to me, more leverage to try and hustle for more incremental space. Do you invest in contracting secondary space where you can afford to very strategically? These are all things, to be honest with you, Allie, that we're trying to wrap our head around now, because right. we got these opportunities maybe a little early in our life cycle. And while we have some grocery stores that are absolutely crushing the category averages because it's close to a lot of Zav's restaurants, there are others in other parts of the country where nobody knows we exist. And, right. you know, Sprouts, for example, has Zav's on the top shelf in the center of the store that I joke, but I'm dead serious that my wife, who's 5 feet tall, can't reach it if she wanted to reach up there and buy it.
You've heard where we are with the fresh in Wegmans. You've heard me talk about
it. Okay,
so there's a set in the middle of the store that has a refrigerator that is like alt cheese. Mm-hmm. It's a refrigerator with a door. As you know, when there's a refrigerator, there's like 6 inches at the bottom that's metal sure. before sure. the door starts. We are in the, like, at the bottom where like 80% of yeah. the couch is covered by metal. And then yeah. you see this like little like spout sticking up when you open the refrigerator door, and then the 8 shelves above us are plant-based cheese.
Yeah,
so
it makes it tough.
So the fact that anybody buys this at Wegmans, I mean, it's like, it's amazing, and it's yep. a beautiful store, and I no shade to them. It is just the luck of the draw. Someone's got to be in
game.
That spot.
It's the game.
And we are. But I mean, I always joke that the fact that anyone buys us there is like a miracle. It's a miracle.
But you've adjusted your expectations accordingly, and then I think yes. the key is what I at least call to myself, like, the next best action. What, knowing what I know, what do I have to do about this, or what can I do about this right. to go from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, you know, whatever we can do to get it going, and not expecting the same thing there as I do the Whole Foods in Silver Lake, where we have a lot of restaurants in the area.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I think, I mean, there's so many titles for this one, but I think, you know, it's like how you wonder what's going to happen in 5 years. And then you're like, actually, just Sister Bear, don't start thinking about 5 years. Just like, what's going to happen tomorrow? Just one foot in front of the other. What is my expectation for this channel for this month or yes. this year for this quarter? How much am I willing to spend on it? because I can't spend on everyone, right? Yep. Where is it in the list of priorities? If I take my pedal off of that or the foot off that pedal, how's it going to impact things? What are the potential downsides? But really, like, it's like to everything there is a season. Like to every channel, there is a purpose.
Absolutely. Context is king, is the way I see it. And you got to make sure that wherever you are spending your time, wherever your product shows up, you are presenting it in the best possible context you can, given the hand you're dealt. So we're trying to. Can I curse on this show?
Yeah, definitely.
I used to work, before doing Zabs, I worked for a couple beverage companies, non-alcoholic beverage companies, but we worked with beer distributors oftentimes, and they called that part of the cooler where your product is the shit kicker. And it's not, right. It's not glamorous. None of this is glamorous, but we work with what we got and you gotta find these other paths of least resistance and find ways to build story elsewhere if necessary.
Yeah. And I think just on a final note, you know, I had Greg Lorenzo on here and he taught me about the spotlight effect, right? Like part of the spotlight effect is like, no one's going to notice if you use the word sweet on two of your SKUs. Like, no one cares. It's like, we're not walking around and everyone's like, wait, what happened to your eyebrow? Like, no one cares. And if they do notice, they only notice for like maybe a half a second before they start worrying about themselves again. And it's similar with brands in the sense that, which is kind of liberating to me. Like, if you're in the shit kicker, it's not personal. It's not like they don't understand how amazing I could do and they're not helping me reach my potential. Like, it's just, it is what it is, and you make the best of it and you figure it out. And you probably have places where you're in a great spot and
absolutely
another brand isn't. And
yes,
you know, it kind of alleviates some of the, like, they don't get me, they don't get, which we all get because we've put our lives into these things, which of course we care. So, and we're people, so we're going to take it kind of personally, but
it's not,
that just sets you up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not personal. And the longer you hold on to that, the more it frustrates you and distracts you from doing the thing right in front of you. So yes, we're very lucky in some circumstances. We get unlucky in other circumstances and we just got to put it upon ourselves to do what we can, you know, and we're fortunate to have consumers who love our product, and we're so grateful for every single one of them that goes in there and asks for Zabs, and you know, that makes all the difference. So we invest really heavily in what's right in front of us and what we have the best shot to control, and hope it ultimately sort of knocks some dominoes down along the way.
Yep. Well, that was awesome. And by the way, that was like, you finished where you started with controlling controllables. So that was very poetic. Miles, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been fun getting to know you, and I think we're going to do some fun partnerships together, and I can be like your New York, me and Brooks. I can be like your
Chef from
the rooftop Zabs gal.
I'll take you up on that.
Amazing.
Armin, thank you so much for having
me. Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Armin, thank you for stepping in for Liam and engineering as well as you do. And thank you for coming in to help this week. Listeners, I don't think I'm recording next week. I will be at a co-packer, but I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of In the Sauce. In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.